Iran hits back and boom, they miss. The question everyone's asking is, did they miss intentionally? Because it was a pathetic retaliation from a pathetic Muslim regime that now gives Trump a really easy out. The president's saying he doesn't want to use our military and appears to now be taking the off-ramp. Good. Plus, Virginia saying, screw you to the feds, because we've got a constitution that gives us the right to bear arms, and if you want to encroach on that, Northam blackface, we hereby declare ourselves a sanctuary from your tyranny. Plus, the impeachment soap opera, believe it or not, that's still happening. So we've got our congressional correspondent, Nate Madden, to fill us in on the story he's been following closely so that you don't have to. White House Brief begins right now. So Iran retaliates. This is no surprise to anyone. If they didn't retaliate, it would have been way too easy. It would have been way too easy a victory. So this was expected, and Trump has said he's going to do what's necessary to ensure that Iran never acquires a nuclear weapon as long as he is president. First, want to say happy new hair to guys who have discovered Keeps hair loss treatment. I say happy new hair because if you have Keeps, you're well on your way to keeping the hair you have. And listen up, 66% of men will even experience hair regrowth with Keeps. Losing your hair sucks, so do something about it. And you can do something about it by going to keeps.com/today. They offer the generic versions of the only two FDA-approved hair loss products out there. And these generic versions are going to save you a bundle. So what are you waiting for? With Keeps, you can save your hair without ever leaving your couch. You answer a few questions, snap a few pics of your hair, and a licensed doctor will review your info and recommend the right treatment for you. Then it is shipped directly to your door. Here's the happy new hair deal I got for you. Go to keeps.com/today. to get your first order of Keeps hair loss treatment for 50% off. Yes, your first order for 50% off. That is keeps.com/today. Keeps.com/today. So Trump addressed the country to give us an update on Iran. He appropriately indicated new sanctions on the country to keep up the pressure while avoiding military consequences, and he called for peace.
Finally, to the people and leaders of Iran, we want you to have a future, and a great future, one that you deserve, one of prosperity at home and harmony with the nations of the world. The United States is ready to embrace peace with all who seek it.
And before that, he explained how weak and sad and pathetic the Iranians' attack was. Those weren't his words exactly. Those were mine. But he did explain that Iran, they failed to actually harm any Americans, and there were no lives lost at all.
We suffered no casualties. All of our soldiers are safe, and only minimal damage was sustained at our military bases. Our great American forces are prepared for anything. Iran appears to be standing down, which is a good thing for all parties concerned and a very good thing for the world. No American or Iraqi lives were lost because of the precautions taken, the dispersal of forces, and an early warning system that worked very well.
Which is why they're calling it a mere fireworks show, because it was such a weak, ineffective response.
Well, we didn't mean for it to be a very strong response because we wanted to stay in accordance with international law.
Really, international law? Is that the case? Or were you just scared of us? Here's Iran's supreme leader's justification.
A slap was delivered last night. But what is important is that the seditious presence of America in the region should be ended.
Just a little slap. That's all we wanted to do.
And the Iranian foreign minister, Javad Zarif, tweeted, quote, "We do not seek escalation or war, but will defend ourselves against any aggression." Yeah, they know better than to escalate this. No, what they're afraid of is spilling American blood because they know we will launch, Trump will launch, fire and fury. So that could explain why they decided not to direct their missiles to hit areas of the bases that were, you know, actually populated by Americans. As we said, some are saying it wasn't even an accident. It wasn't an accident to miss Americans, including this former House military advisor.
They responded by intentionally missing Americans to kill Americans.
They
and
did
to just
that on
demonstrate.
Purpose. You're saying they did that on purpose.
I believe that they have. I think that it is a mistake to look at what happened and believe that the Iranians' missile force is incapable of hitting its intended target or taking out lives. If you remember, back in September, the Iranians were the ones that were responsible for attacking the Saudi oil fields, and they used cruise missiles and drones, and they conducted a highly sophisticated hybrid attack against those facilities.
But this time, instead, they used unguided missiles. Unguided missiles, which are what the Nazis used in World War II. So it's to say that it's not exactly the most up-to-date technology. So it's good that they're not willing to strike us and kill our men in response to Soleimani. But it's also a mistake to say that there was no risk to it. There certainly was risk to it. We didn't know how the Iranian regime was going to respond. No one did. No one did. Except for maybe intelligence, but certainly no one boasting on TV and Twitter that they knew exactly how this would unfold knew. I'm not sure how many times I said, I don't know how Iran's going to respond. I don't know how many times I said that this week, and yet my inbox was full.
Miller, you don't have the intel that Trump has. You don't know what's going to be done. How do you know how Iran is going to respond and that they're going to do so with more military actions?
How many times did I say it? I don't. Nobody does. And therefore, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I do. But by the way, the lack of intelligence, it goes both ways. I was asked, well, why aren't you celebrating the Soleimani attack? Look, I don't have the intelligence to know that Iran is not going to escalate something and then nullify Trump's promise to pull troops out, which is one of the primary reasons I voted for the guy. I had a guest yesterday say it's unlikely that Iran will respond with anything significant, and his guess is probably better than mine. But it is still a guess, and brinkmanship is a very risky strategy. So I relayed those risks to my audience, which I believe is my job, and therefore a fair thing to do. If you want somebody who's going to blindly cheerlead, there are plenty of great accounts to follow. And I don't mean that facetiously. There are great accounts out there that look to Trump blindly and say our leader is right. For me, my ideal situation in the Middle East is a troop withdrawal. For me, that's the ultimate goal. That's one of the biggest reasons I voted for the guy. That's what I'm rooting for. Now, I may not have the intel, but what I do have is history to go from, which has shown that taking out a military leader revered by millions of people is not always going to make the region safer or less chaotic. Max Abrams, a political science professor at Northeastern University, has an insightful piece where he explains, quote, "The record shows that removing leaders often leads to more chaotic violence, particularly against civilians." He explains militant groups become more violent. More violent, not less, after the death or imprisonment of their senior figures. And he goes through examples. The examples he goes through, El Chapo, when captured by Mexican Marines, made the gang bloodier than ever. Violence increased, as did target selection. When you take out high-ranking gang members, this kingpin strategy increased homicides by 80% in the municipalities where the leaders had operated for at least 1 year. Other examples include the Brits, when they launched an operation to stomp out an uprising in Kenya in 1954, they captured leaders around Kenya's capital. And what happened after they did that? Well, it led to a period of more violence, not less. South Africa, 1961, Nelson Mandela co-founded an armed wing of the African National Congress called the MK, which stressed properly controlled violence. Which means the group avoided terrorist attacks for years until Mandela, he was sentenced to life in prison, which means he's taken out of the picture. And then what happened? Well, then the group started to engage in brutal killings of civilians. They started to engage in looting, arson, you name it. 1998, the Filipino police assassinated the leader of ISIS's East Asia branch, Abdurrah Jack Abu Bakar John Jilani, and that group started to prey on private citizens. And then you guys probably remember, you guys probably know this, when Nigerian police executed Boko Haram's founder, Muhammad Yusuf, the terrorist organization became ruthless on civilians. So Abrams writes, militant leaders, you know, the ones like Soleimani, have exhibited learning behavior by eschewing, i.e. avoiding, over time indiscriminate violence against civilians, or by at least recognizing the strategic costs associated with that behavior. Because their replacements are less likely to have come to this realization, leadership decapitation is associated with more terrorism, not less, in the immediate aftermath of operationally successful targeted killings. Baghdadi did not understand limited attacks, all right? Baghdadi was in favor of maximum carnage because Baghdadi's subordinates were lone wolves. Soleimani, on the other hand, was an Iranian major general, a major general of an actual nation, not a bunch of ragtag terrorists. And Soleimani recognized that mass casualty and violence had the potential to backfire. All right, so that was the concern. It is a valid concern. I don't think anyone refuses to acknowledge the risk in the maneuver of taking out Soleimani. All right, and because Iran is too chicken to do anything that would harm us, it looks like Trump is now able to back away. Excellent. I've always said Trump shines in his foreign policy. Right now, we're back to the status quo, but right now we're in a place we can now pursue peace through strength. Trump said American strength, military and economic, is the best deterrent. In other words, we're going to come, we're going to kill you, we're going to break your stuff, but we're not going to own your dumpster fire. All right, forget about World War III. There's not going to be a World War III. What you really need to worry about is a Civil War II. No, I'm kidding, joking, or am I? Well, it will depend on how far Governor Blackface of Virginia is willing to push the limits with the gun control measures he's promising to enact. Now, we told you a while about when Virginia counties began declaring themselves Second Amendment sanctuaries, and we will keep watching the story closely over the next few weeks. Gun experts and Second Amendment enthusiasts across the country are all watching what's going on in Virginia because this, folks, is the big litmus test. This is going to set the tone for the rest of the nation. Are we a country of free people entitled with the God-given right to self-defense, or are we living under tyrants? And at the top of this list of absurd proposals the citizens of Virginia are claiming sanctuary from is the red flag law. That's where, you know, your neighbor that you're beefing with can now go to the police and say, hey, this person has a gun in their home and I feel like they're a threat. And then the police are going to be allowed to trot over to your home and take away your guns without any sort of due process. Given that the 4th, 5th, and 14th Amendments protect against unlawful searches and seizures and guarantee due process, some might say this directly violates our Constitution. And by some, I mean anybody who can read. Now, there are also proposals that will create many more gun-free zones by banning weapons in state office buildings. And I ask this sincerely. I really do. How many more people must be slaughtered in gun-free zones before liberals realize that they do not make a single person safer? Need I remind you that the Virginia Beach shooting in May of last year that resulted in 12 deaths took place at a municipal building? I'm sure there were people who began carrying to work after that. You'd be an idiot not to. Now they're going to be made criminals for reasonably wanting to protect themselves and their fellow coworkers should an active shooter come through their office door. And it's not just where you can protect yourself that they want to regulate. It's what kind of gun you want to protect yourself with. Other proposals, quote, include possible bans on large magazines, expanded bans on carrying certain loaded shotguns or rifles, and limitations or bans on the sale of assault firearms. Assault firearms, which would be defined as certain semi-automatic guns, mainly that can shoot more than 10 rounds. Wow, assault firearms. Do you guys have assault firearms in your home? That's a new one. That's a new one. Sounds an awful lot like a ban on AR-15s, no? That is a proposal to effectively disarm the people of the Commonwealth of Virginia. This is totalitarian. But wait, there's more. A separate bill would add a new definition to the state's ban on paramilitary activity to include assembling with one or more people with the intent of intimidating any person or group of persons by drilling, parading, or marching with any firearm, any explosive or incendiary device, or any components or combination thereof. Doesn't violate the Second Amendment, my ass. And this one may even violate the First. Assembling with one or more people? Assembling with people, even if you have a firearm to protect yourself, that's peaceful assembly. That's in the First Amendment. They are going after the most fundamental rights that Americans have. They are trying to ban peaceful assembly. They are trying to ban your guns. They're trying to ban militias, hell. They are also looking at raising the minimum age requirement to purchase and own a gun from 18 to 21. You know, at what point do we just say, you know, that's it. Childhood is officially extended to age 26 when you're kicked off your parents' health insurance. And until then, you're going to be a child. You're going to be a little kid and cannot make any decisions for yourself after all. At all. Mm-hmm. So no, the Blackface administration, they're also considering an assault weapon registration requirement, and they want to outlaw owning and operating an indoor gun range unless it's in a building owned by the state. I mean, what would that do? An outdoor range is fine? Control is what it would do. And that is their ultimate objective in all of these instances. So there's a massive grassroots movement of Virginians who will not accept this one bit. According to the Virginia Citizens Defense League, 90 out of 95 total Virginia counties are now Second Amendment sanctuaries. So that has prompted some lawmakers to propose bringing in the National Guard to enforce these dictatorial demands. 90 out of 95 counties. Let that sink in for a second. The people of the Virginia Commonwealth are not sitting idly by. 90 out of 95. These people are not going to sit by as their rights are trampled on. So the big day for this movement, the Second Amendment Sanctuary Movement, is January 20th. Put that date in your calendar. That day is Lobby Day in Richmond, Virginia's capital, and concerned citizens will be rallying at the Capitol to show the government that they will not accept these laws and that there will likely be counter-protests as well, because they will fight back if their constitutional rights are under assault, which they are. Even some Democrats are getting sick of this impeachment nonsense, and they are eager to start the impeachment trial. But in the way has been a standoff between Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi, who has been loath to send the articles to the Senate. Our congressional correspondent, Nate Madden, has more. Nate?
Thank you, John. Basically, what we're dealing with is Nancy Pelosi tried to roll Mitch McConnell on the Senate impeachment trial process, and now it's looking pretty clear that she's failed on it. So you may remember that after the impeachment vote back in December, Pelosi wouldn't commit to sending over the articles of impeachment to the Senate until she was sure she could get a fair process in the upper chamber. Now, Chuck Schumer followed that up with a list of witnesses and some documents, saying that he wanted an agreement with Mitch McConnell that they would hear this evidence in a Senate trial before they would agree to the rules of the trial itself. Now, the Senate can't proceed without first establishing the rules of the trial. And a lot of Republicans are saying they don't want to call in any more witnesses, that the House pretty much covered all the ground they needed to cover, and there's not much of a Republican appetite for going further into this investigation in the upper chamber since the House has already done it. Now, who are the witnesses that Schumer's trying to call, and why haven't we already heard from them? Well, they include National Security Advisor, former National Security Advisor John Bolton, and acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, and a couple others. Now, the witnesses they're calling for in this case weren't called during the House's investigation because House Democrats didn't want to take the time necessary to take the White House's claims of executive privilege to federal court and have this dispute between the two branches worked out legally. They wanted to get this thing over with so they could vote before Christmas and send everybody home. Now, you need 51 senators to set the rules for an impeachment trial. There are 53 Republicans in the Senate chamber. So Schumer would have needed to peel off a few of those Republicans in order to have any kind of real leverage on the situation. And some people were wondering what Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, or anyone else in the Senate might do. But despite all of that speculation and wondering, no such group of Republican holdouts ended up coming to Schumer's rescue, and he didn't get the votes he needed. Mitch McConnell came out Tuesday and said that he did have the votes, and those are to agree to the rules for a phase one of a trial, which would be where the defense and the prosecution would both give their opening arguments, where senators would be able to submit written questions, and then after that, we can talk about whether or not to call more witnesses if they're necessary. And now that Nancy Pelosi's holdout ploy has failed, you're even starting to see some Senate Democrats say that it's time for her to just send the thing over already so that the Senate can start it and begin the trial that it's supposed to handle under the Constitution.
So, Nate, why on earth would Nancy Pelosi, let me ask it this way, what is her purported reason for stalling this? And then why do you think she actually is wanting to stall this? Because there's no way in hell that they're going to actually eject the president from office. So what is she trying to accomplish with this?
Well, I mean, ultimately, if you can keep some sort of an impeachment investigation trial going up into the Senate, you know, you can create more bad press for the president. So that's the obvious win for Democrats, if they can get any of these witnesses to come forward, right? You can drag, you know, all those hearings, everything else, all the stuff where they're dragging Trump through the mud, and they get to react to it, they get to put out their statements and all that. That's the political benefit of getting to do this. Now, Schumer and Pelosi, so Schumer's whole thing as far as it comes to calling these witnesses has been, we need to get all the evidence, we need to hear all the evidence. You know, Pelosi says, we want to make sure that we have a fair trial, we want to know the arena that we're dealing in. Here's the thing. They had the opportunity in the House to actually go and call these witnesses and have them be part of the investigation, right? This is what you and I talked about. We talked about the bogus obstruction of Congress charge that was in the impeachment
made
articles.
Up.
Right? So you have three co-equal branches of government, and you had a dispute between two of the branches of government about what witnesses could be called, whether they were privileged, whether they could actually be subpoenaed by the House. You have a third branch of government that is supposed to work all this out, and they decided that they didn't want to go through the process of having to have the third branch work this out because it could have taken months. It could have taken too long. And this was so very urgent. But now, it's apparently not urgent enough to where you can't just forestall the entire process by trying to exert effort, trying to exert power and control over a chamber of Congress that you don't control to make them do what you want for the thing that you didn't do in the first place.
Nate Madden, hanging around these swamp rats like a saint. Thank you, Nate. We appreciate the update.
Take care, brother.
All right, everyone, Nate Madden, Blaze Media Congressional Correspondent. Hey, guys, thank you for listening to the White House Brief podcast. If you haven't already, remember to subscribe to the podcast. Please rate it, and if you feel like doing it, please leave a review. It really helps us out. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.